Greetings, this is Dr. Bill Bailey. Glad you could join us once again on the Traditional Naturopath. This week we have a lot of things to talk about, and I want to get right into them because I believe it's going to be a tremendous benefit to you to hear about what's happening on the natural health front this week. We have both some things that I think will be of interest in terms of the information that we have in terms of natural health issues, I guess you might say, and then also some fairly controversial things to talk about that I want to get to. But first of all, let's go into the items that I blogged about this week on the Traditional Naturopath blog. If you're not familiar, you know, I know folks get the podcast through a lot of different ways. You may get it through iTunes. You may get it through other podcast directories. You may even be listening to it, so to speak, not live, but such as it is live via the internet by going to the Traditional Naturopath site and clicking on our link that we have there. In case you're not familiar, I will mention that. There's a link over on the upper right-hand part of the page that says, listen to our podcast streaming audio. What that allows you to do is listen to the podcast without having to download it. That streaming audio term means that you would click on it and it would actually begin to play through an online player. So that may be a benefit to some of you. But you possibly have gotten the podcast through other means. You may not know about our website. I want to take a few minutes to talk about some of the features of the website. If you go to www.traditionalnaturopath.com, now, traditional, you probably can do pretty well with the spelling of that word, T-R-A-D-I-T-I-O-N-A-L, traditional. Naturopath, there's a lot of different ways that I've seen folks try to spell naturopath, but let me give you the correct one, N-A-T-U-R-O-P-A-T-H. And if you run all that together, traditionalnaturopath.com, that is the address of our website. And I trust as you go there, you'll find all kinds of things that will be of benefit to you. But let me just give you a rundown of a couple of things I'd like to point out. First of all, if you look in the right-hand column, kind of in the middle of the screen there, you'll see the month, the current month, which as I record this is July of 2006. And so you would see the month of July, and you would see highlighted the different days that I have blogged about a particular topic. So you can see right away what days I have actually entered a new topic. If you then click on one of those numbers, like let's say Wednesday the 5th, if you click on that link on the 5th, it's the article that I wrote about how scientists have confirmed that a particular folk remedy works to repel mosquitoes, which is what I blogged about on that day. So that's just a neat little feature of the site that allows you to navigate and find things based on time. So you may want to find the very latest entry, and in this case that would be July 22nd, which is yesterday, and as I record this obviously, and if you click on the 22nd you would get the blog entry for that day. So that's kind of a neat feature. Another feature we have is at the very top of that right hand navigation bar, you'll see a little link there that looks like a little iPod, kind of a small representation of an iPod, and it says podcast subscription. Excuse me. As you click on that link, it brings up a pop-up screen. Now, if you have your web browser set to reject all pop-ups, then you may not see that. You may get a little warning that it's trying to open a pop-up. If, however, your web browser, like most people, have their web browser set to accept pop-ups if you request it. Now, there's a distinction there. You know, I don't employ pop-ups that just pop up on the screen without you requesting it. I feel like that's really bad etiquette on the part of the person who's running the website. But I have a link there, and the reason I have it pop up is because it just gives you a little bit of information about the podcast and about how you can subscribe to the podcast. See, the great thing about podcasts is that you can actually set it up to subscribe to it and get it delivered to you automatically every time there's a podcast, which we do it weekly, so every week you would get our podcast delivered to your computer, and then you'd be able to listen to it. And then I also have some information about what is podcasting, how to use our online streaming player, various different things, even where to get some free software that will allow you to subscribe and get the information on your computer every week. So, and it's a free package called Juice that allows, it's what I, one I use personally, and I find it to be really beneficial. So hopefully that will be of interest to you as well. One other thing I want to mention, I don't want to take a whole lot more time with it, but there is another link there on that right-hand side that says News for Your Website. If you click that link, it takes you to a page that I have developed that basically allows you to use the content of our website on your website. And what do I mean by that? Well, there's a technology called RSS, which is really simple syndication, that allows you to have a news feed. So on your website, now maybe you don't design your own website, I don't know, you may have a website provider that does this for you. You can tell them about this by going to this page, clicking on this link, and it will give you the code that you need to use the news feed off our website. So you could actually have a feed of all the articles that we talk about on traditional naturopath. Now, if you want to do that, that's great. We have no problems with you using our content as long as it's not altered. So, you know, that way you can benefit from, and the people that go to your website can benefit from the information that we find. So hopefully that will be of interest to you and benefit you. I just wanted to mention some of those things about the website, and I don't want to take a whole lot more time on that. So let's go on now to the various items that we talked about this week on the blog. First of all, prediabetes may raise the risk for Alzheimer's disease. Now, as you know, I'm sure, Alzheimer's disease is a very serious condition where over time, as the disease progresses, the mind begins to lose memory to the point that, you know, people, parents can't even forget their children, won't recognize them, won't know who they are, and so forth. It's a very terrible, debilitating disease. And it turns out that prediabetes conditions, and by that I mean things like Syndrome X, where basically it's not full-blown diabetes, but there are issues with insulin and the use of insulin in the body. Basically, it's sensitivity to sugar and to the fact that sugar causes your body to produce that insulin. Those kinds of issues can actually lead to Alzheimer's disease. This is a study that they did, and basically what the study showed is that there is a link there. There's a link in that progression toward Alzheimer's disease. Predisposition maybe is the better way of putting it. Doesn't mean that if you have Syndrome X issues, you're going to develop Alzheimer's disease. It's just a predisposition. So what we need to do there, and here's the recommendation that I would have, is to avoid processed sugars. There is no reason to use a processed sugar. It is, in my view, personally, it is poisonous to the body to use a pure processed sugar. It has an effect on your body that if it were, and I've said this several times before, if sugar were to be released today as a new food or a new additive, it probably wouldn't get past the FDA, because the effect of sugar on the body is harsher than a lot of drugs. It causes changes in your body that are more extreme by far than a lot of drugs that are produced today. Now, that's amazing when you think about it. There's been a lot of problems, a lot of conditions caused by improper use of drugs or even, in fact, some drugs that have been produced and used according to their protocols have still proven to be harmful to the human body. Well, sugar has a more alarming change in metabolic rate and in your body than some of these drugs do. So that's really something to think about. Now, that ties right into this next item that I talked about on July 18th on the blog, which is another reason to avoid processed sugar. You know, it's been common knowledge for some time that overconsumption of processed sugar is a problem. And one of the main areas that you get a lot of processed sugar is in the corn syrup that you see on the label of foods. It increases the chance of leading to that syndrome X condition, the insulin sensitivity and resistance that we talked about, and might even eventually lead to diabetes. Corn syrup is a very potent and powerful processed sugar. So we really need to stay away from the corn syrups that are in foods. And this is a quote that I got from Dr. McCullough, who has an entry on his blog about this. He says, getting back to the study, I find it tragic that this is not really new information. The article mentions Otto Warburg, who was the German physician that was awarded a Nobel Prize over 75 years ago for first uncovering cancer cells' massive dependence on sugar as a fuel source. Yes, you read that correctly. Physicians have been exposed to this information for 75 years, when most of your great-grandparents were alive and kicking. It is reassuring to have Harvard researchers confirm this again, though. But do you think for one moment this will change the clinical protocols of the average oncologist? Don't hold your breath. It's just shocking to me that they don't understand the basic fact, this basic fact, and integrate it into their treatment program. So basically what he's saying is processed sugars, corn syrup, can feed, this is what the new study shows, can feed cancers. So, you know, instead of, and again, this is personal opinion, instead of jumping into chemotherapy, what they should do is begin to look at the diet of the individual. If they're consuming a tremendous amount of processed sugars, a lot of corn syrup-based foods, then that is feeding that cancerous condition. Now, you've got to work with your health provider. Remember what I say every podcast, and I repeat it a lot, maybe so much that you'll get tired of it. I hope not. But you are the person most responsible for your health. And that means you need to work in conjunction with your health care provider to come up with a program, to come up with a treatment, to come up with some methodology that is going to work for you and who you are. You know, you don't have to just blindly accept what somebody's telling you, whether they be a naturopath, whether they be an allopathic practitioner, you know, your doctor on the corner, whatever. You don't have to accept what they say blindly. Now, they're there as a professional to tell you what they have learned, but your treatment is up to you, okay? Now, I say that because if you want to approach a treatment for a serious condition like cancer by changing your diet, cutting out processed sugars, cutting out corn syrups, eating natural green foods, and this is an important one, changing the acidity of your body. Cancer, it has been found by many research studies, cannot exist in an alkaline environment. It requires an acidic environment. Unfortunately, in the United States, the predominant condition of human tissue is acidity. We eat a lot of things. We consume things that produces an acidic environment. We need an alkaline environment. Now, obviously, a neutral environment is perhaps the best thing to shoot for. But it's really, in our environment, in our society, if we would lean toward the alkaline environment, we'd be a whole lot better off, because there's always going to be a tendency to acidity. So if we can begin to eat things and consume things that will cause alkalinity to be brought, you know, to the fore, then I think we'll be much better off and certainly be much healthier, because things like cancer, as I say, cannot exist in that alkaline environment of tissue. It needs to be acidic. And that, again, you know, not opinion. This has been proven by research. So what is a good way to get your body to be more alkaline? One way to do that is to consume calcium. Calcium combined with vitamin D, which is a vitamin that causes your body to more readily absorb the calcium, will tend to bring your body back to a more alkaline condition, which is why vitamin D and calcium are such benefits to your natural health. All right. So, you know, again, I am not a medical doctor. Let me say this again, make it very clear. I am not a medical doctor. I cannot prescribe. I cannot recommend you to do any particular medical allopathic type of treatment. That's not my function. A naturopath, a traditional naturopath such as myself, and I am a board certified naturopath, I will tell you things that will help you naturally to build your immune system and to build your body back into a condition that will maintain health. It's not a quick fix. It's not an overnight thing. It's something that will help you achieve a healthy life given time and given following natural protocols. Hopefully that's clear to you. Again, you should be working in conjunction with your local health care provider, your doctor, whoever, to come up with a program that will work for you. And we'll talk more about that in just a few minutes. Let's talk about this next item from July the 18th. Exposure to chlorine in indoor pools may lead to asthma. This is really brings up a whole area that we could spend a lot of time on, which is exposure to metals and chemicals and how it affects your health. Now, that's everything from mercury amalgams in your fillings to the aluminum that you get from aluminum chlorhydrate in your deodorant. There are a lot of places where you're being exposed to environmental conditions that are basically, to put it simply, hazardous to your health, or at least are not helping to build your body's immune system, helping to build your body, but rather trying to tear down your body. Mercury is a chemical that, a metal that can tremendously affect your health. So can aluminum, all of these metals. Chlorine is a type of element or chemical that can also cause problems. And what this study shows is that because an indoor pool situation, because you're in an enclosed environment, a lot of chlorine is used to keep the pool water clear and keep it clean and free of contaminants. But the chlorine gas released by the chlorine used in that water can't evaporate out, can't go out into the air like an outdoor pool. It goes into the air of an indoor pool, and that air does not get recirculated properly most often, and it just stays in the air. So what happens is constant continual exposure to that chlorine from an indoor pool is more intensive than it would be in an outdoor pool situation. So that a Belgian study showed that the rates of childhood asthma and wheezing rose by 2-3% for every indoor swimming pool per 100,000 people. The researchers believe that the key could be the exposure to chlorine, which is used to keep the pools clean. Now, basically what it does is it causes these harmful chlorine fumes to damage the lungs, and the damage of the cells in the lungs can lead to the asthma and the wheezing conditions. Now, let me say this very clearly. I'm talking about constant exposure to lots of chlorine in an indoor pool situation. This is not to say, you know, don't ever go swimming, don't ever use a chlorine pool. I'm not even saying don't even go to an indoor pool. I'm saying if you're constantly exposed to that. Now, I don't know too many people in this situation, but if you are a person that has an indoor pool at your home and you go swimming every single day and you don't have that room that your pool is in properly ventilated, so you could avoid this whole issue by just venting the chlorine gas to the outside by having some kind of air exchanger that would pull that out. But basically, it's talking about that kind of exposure can lead to this problem. So, be aware. The bottom line of this is that everything that you come into contact with, whether it be the aluminum chlorhydrate in the deodorant, whether it be the mercury amalgams, whatever it may be that you come in contact with, has the potential to cause problems in your body. Doesn't mean it happens automatically. There's potential, and so we need to be aware of that. That's where it comes back to that message I drive home so often. You're the one most responsible for your health. Therefore, you need to think about what it is you're exposing your body to. All right. The benefits of sunshine and vitamin D. We've talked about this before on the podcast, and I won't spend a tremendous amount of time on that. But basically, there are studies that are coming out every day that are showing that vitamin D, basically derived through sunshine, is a greater benefit to health than has been, you know, dreamed of in recent years. There's just been so many studies that have come out that shows that vitamin D just zaps disease. It basically slows down cancer, strengthens bones, helps all kinds of condition. It can even cause and affect a naturally occurring antibiotic or antimicrobial effect. In other words, it can actually destroy harmful, bacteria and so forth in the body. So vitamin D is something we really have been deficient in and we've lacked in the body that we really, really need to go back and look at very seriously and find that, just that 20 minutes of sunshine a day can make a tremendous amount of difference. All right, next item that was from July 21st, let's talk about this. Medication errors injure 1.5 million Americans a year. That's a staggering statistic. And again, you know, as I say in the blog entry, at the end of every podcast I say, remember, you're the person most responsible for your health. And this article really points out that responsibility. Because what it boils down to is your doctor or nurse in a hospital or whoever may come to you and say, okay, time to take your whatever drug. You need to be asking them, what is it? What does it do? What are the side effects? Are there any contraindications? Oh, by the way, I'm taking this. Will that have a problem with this drug? Ask questions. Be irritating. Just really take it upon yourself to make sure that that doctor or that nurse knows that you are aware of the fact that they're trying to prescribe a drug to you, and you want to know what it's about. Because what's happening is people are being put in situations that they're just being, basically, drugs being pushed at them. They take them because the doctor or the nurse says, here, take this. And then there are all kinds of issues that come about due to side effects and drug interactions. And when that happens, it is a shame. It is always regrettable. But I have to come back to, why did you just take the drug blindly? You know, it sounds like I'm saying not to be at all trusting of doctors, physicians, nurses, and I'm not really saying that per se. I'm saying no matter who they are, if they try to get you to take a drug, I'd be the same advice I'd give somebody on the street. If somebody were to walk up to a teenager and say, here, take this drug, you need to say, no, I don't need it. I don't want it. Well, just say no to drugs follows even in the medical profession. If the doctor just kind of, you know, and I'll tell you a story here, and this is a, this one is, comes home to me because it's about my mom. She had been going for 80 some odd years with no drugs, doing fine, you know, strong, mowing the lawn, doing whatever she wanted to do. And she was working with a doctor, bless his heart, an older doctor, because he eventually retired, and in fact, that was the problem. She'd been working with this doctor for a long time. He'd been doing great by her. She'd go take her yearly physical. He'd say, how you doing? She'd say, great. He'd say, go on. I'll see you next year. You know, I mean, that was it, pretty much. But then when he retired, he recommended her to a young doctor. And, you know, it's a young female doctor, but I don't think that has anything to do with it one way or the other. The point is, a young doctor who basically is one of these, you know, well, matter of fact, she told her flat out, she said, when she saw her, she said, Ms. Bailey, how old are you? She told her 80 some years old. And she said, well, what drugs are you taking? She said, none. And the doctor said, now listen closely. The doctor said, oh, well, we'll change that. You should be taking at least two or three at your age. Now, my reaction, had I been there, is no. I'm not going to just be taking some drugs because I'm 80 years old. I'm 80 years old and doing very well, thank you. Now, I'm personally not 80 years old. I'm 50. But the point is, you don't take drugs just because you reach a certain age. The only time you need to take a drug is if it is required by some condition. Okay? So that was the premise that this doctor started out with and proceeded, of course, to find, I mean, hey, you can find just about anything that you can throw a drug at. And doctors are given much incentive to prescribe drugs by drug companies who have people that come to their office every other day trying to shove new drugs on them and telling them that if they sell these certain drugs, they'll get all these various benefits. And it's just, it's a shame that it happens, but it does. So, bottom line is, my mom started taking these various drugs and got to the point that she was falling, you know, she got to the point she couldn't walk well, she was weak, all these different things because of these drugs. It's just so frustrating. And of course, the thing is, you know, your mom's your mom. She's not necessarily going to do what her son tells her to do, but you know. But I, of course, gave her my opinion, and she said, well, he, you know, this person's a doctor. She knows what she's doing, all this kind of stuff. What are you going to do? You know, again, you are the person most responsible for your health. So it's her decision to continue to take these drugs because the doctor says do it. But that's no reason to take them. And every person that I can get to out there that's hearing this podcast that is in that position, you need to be aware you're the person that makes the final decision. You don't have to take it just because the doctor's pushing it on you, okay? And that's a key thing. There's just all kinds of medication errors that occur. There are problems with medication that occur. And they encourage in this article, as a matter of fact, that I have a link to here in the blog, they encourage you to even provide you a list of questions to ask your healthcare provider to make sure that you're not getting some kind of drug that you really don't need to be taking. Now, that ties us directly into this next item, and I'm running short on time, but I'm going to take the time to cover this, if you don't mind. And there's one nice thing about a podcast, even though I try to make it 30 minutes, if we run over a little bit, that's okay. This one deserves some time. This is another glaring example of the fact that you need to be the one responsible for your health. Here's a situation with a young man, 16 years old, and because he's 16 years old, he's a minor. I understand that. From a legal perspective, his parents are the ones that are responsible. But listen closely to this story. This is a young man, Abraham Cherick, 16 years old. He has Hodgkin's disease, which is a form of cancer that affects the lymph nodes of the body. Very, very serious disease, serious cancer that is, of course, fatal. And he went to an oncologist. The oncologist prescribed chemotherapy. He very obediently took the chemotherapy. His parents, of course, all for it, behind it, to try to stop the cancer. The thing you got to understand about chemotherapy is chemical chemotherapy, a therapy designed to use harsh chemicals to kill cancer cells. Now, the thing about these particular chemicals, they will kill cells, but they kill all kinds of cells, not just cancers. Now, they try to make them to where they attack cancer cells primarily and predominantly, but some people are extremely sensitive to chemotherapy, and it begins to kill their body's cells, and it actually begins to kill them. And that's exactly what happened with Abraham Cherick. This first treatment of chemotherapy almost killed him. It just made him so weak he couldn't walk. He was bedfast. He was in terrible condition after this chemotherapy. And so he basically said, as most people would in that situation, isn't there anything else we can do? I don't want to go through this again. And seeing what had happened to their son, his parents also said, yeah, you know, that makes sense. I don't want us to do that again. So that the oncologist said, well, you need to take another round of chemotherapy. And they refused. Now, keep in mind, if you, as an adult listening to this podcast, were in his situation and refused chemotherapy, there is nothing, there is no legal situation where they could come in and say, you must take it. But this young man being a minor, even with his parents agreeing that he didn't have to take this chemotherapy. The oncologist got so upset about it, so enraged by the idea that they would challenge his authority of his recommendation, he went to the local social services of that county, told them the situation, and said he needs to be taken away from his parents. So they came in, took custody of this young man, took him away from his parents, and are going to force him to take the chemotherapy. Now, the young man and his parents appealed to the court system, and what happened is Friday, July 21st, the court agreed with the doctor against the parents, against the young man, and are forcing him to have the second round of chemotherapy. Now, they are planning to appeal it, but if they basically at gunpoint, if you will, force him to have this chemotherapy and it kills him, then who is responsible? The young man didn't want it. The parents didn't want it. The state is forcing him to get chemotherapy. Now, medicine at the point of a gun is wrong. I'll just be as plain as I can. Because they're taking away their personal rights to choose the type of treatment that they wanted. Now, what he had chosen, what he wanted to do, was a sugar-free, organic diet with herbal supplements. Now, that's not something that's going to be a quick fix overnight cure, okay? I understand that. But if that's his choice to use a form of alternative treatment, then he should have the right. And particularly, and again, I understand that this is a minor in this situation, but since his parents are agreeing to it, and his parents are behind it, and they are the ones legally responsible for him, then he should have the right, and they should have the right, to pursue that alternative treatment. Alternative from the point of view of the allopathic medical community. And see, this is the problem that I'm seeing more and more, is that allopathic practitioners, medical doctors, have gotten tremendous amounts of power given to them by their standing and by the legal system and by the laws of the land and of the states. Unfortunately, have been given such power that now, in effect, they're beginning to feel their oats. They're beginning to exercise some of these powers, if you will, to, from my point of view, enslave people to their will, despite the personal will of the individual involved. Now, I'm about to make a really, really, really harsh statement here. If you, as an adult, had been diagnosed with Hodgkin's disease, with a very serious cancer that was definitely fatal, and you told your doctor, I don't want to take chemotherapy, I don't want to take any treatment, I don't want treatment at all. And the doctor says, well, don't you know that in 2 months you'll be dead? If that adult says, I understand that and that's my choice, then by George, they should be able to make that choice and die if they want to. Now you may say, man, Dr. Bill, that's harsh. No, it's not. It's personal freedom. Maybe they would prefer a natural treatment. Maybe they would prefer a lifestyle change. Maybe they would prefer prayer, which, by the way, works as well. So they may want to approach it spiritually. They may want to approach it mentally. They may want to approach it physically. However they want to approach their health care, it is their responsibility and their choice. Now, there are always positions and places and people who are not in a position to make an educated choice. Those are hard choices. Those are hard cases. I understand that. But I'm talking, by and large, you should have personal responsibility. And this is actually something that Dr. Benjamin Rush, during the Revolutionary War period, told the Continental Congress. He made the strong recommendation that it be written into the Constitution that people have the right, the personal right, to make choices about their health, because he saw this coming. He saw that there would possibly be a day when the medical community might start in effect, exercising legal authority over people that they shouldn't have. He recommended this be written into the Constitution. Unfortunately, it was not. They did not agree on that. They did not agree on doing that. From my point of view, Dr. Benjamin Rush, who was a medical doctor who made that statement, he is a hero in the American culture, even though they didn't listen to him, because they should have. They should have written it in there, as well as the right to, you know, the pursuit of happiness, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness they should have had in there, and personal health choices. Unfortunately, they didn't. But also, unfortunately, that's coming back to bite us, so to speak, somewhat in this country. We need to be aware that there are, in effect, forces at work that are trying to take away your personal health freedoms. And you need to stand up for your personal rights. Believe me, it will be of benefit to you to do that. Well, I kind of got off on a little bit of a tear there. But I want you to join me for upcoming podcasts as we talk about some of these issues and really get into depth on some of these things. Hope you enjoyed the podcast this week. Remember, until next week, again, you are the person most responsible for your personal health.